I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I am your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and yes, I am thrilled to be here with all of you. Today, we have a very interesting interview that's going to come up in our second segment here. You know, we see the phenomenon of school shootings and workplace shootings continuing. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen, more school shootings. And I know, you know, that's what I do. My company, True Security Design, we're trying to save lives. We're out there doing threat assessments. We do student-based threat assessments. I teach and train teachers and business people, everybody, how to de-escalate situations, how to spot potentially dangerous people before they can attack us. And I do it as a passion now because I told you all not too long ago about the incident at my son Jack's school where I got a call in the car. I was driving home and I got a call in the car that says, just so you know, the police want you to know there's been a shooting at the high school. Well, it's one thing to hear about it on the news. It's another when it's coming through your phone and it's about your kid. And this is what I do for a living. I mean, I'm a cop. I ran to these things. But when it was my child, I got to tell you, it changes your entire perspective on this. And luckily, it turns out that it was not a shooting in the school. It was a shooting near the school. And the kid who got shot ran to the high school to get some help because he knew there'd be people there. But the school was put in lockdown for hours. The local police did a fantastic job. I got to say, they really did a great job. You know, I'm concerned a little bit about some of the things the school does, but apparently they did a pretty good job also. But that's pretty scary. You know, we had the shooting in California a few weeks ago. We had the shooting in Parkland, Florida, which was horrible. We have the shooting. How many towns can I name? I could go on and on and on between people who are getting killed in their workplaces and these children who are getting killed at school. So today in segment two, my guest is going to be Mr. Andrew Pollack. Andrew is the father of Meadow, who was murdered in the Parkland High School shooting going back a couple years ago now. And Andrew has made it his business to go out and inform people about what they need to know about violence in these schools. And his big push, which is what you're going to hear, is that he's concerned that really we're liberalizing so much of our interaction, including the criminal justice system, that these violent, dangerous kids, you know, we overlook that stuff because we don't want to stigmatize violent, dangerous kids. So they simply pack them into your child's classroom, and those kids are now in your school with your kids. And that's what happened down in Parkland. And Andrew, just absolutely an amazing guy. And he will tell us about his book, which everybody should run out and get. It's called, you know, Why Meadow Died. It's on Amazon. You can find it a lot of places. He gives his entire understanding of what he thinks parents need to do. And that's who he's coming to the parents. He's telling you what you need to know. What happened to his daughter shouldn't happen to your child because of politics or because of these policies that are upside down and backwards when it comes to safety and security. Because we want to, we want to be politically correct all the time. So a violent kid is just a troubled kid. I know they're having mindfulness days now. They're having, you know, hand-holding parties. We see in colleges, you know, at the Trump election, what did they have? Crying rooms. I mean, all that might be good psychologically for the kids, I guess. I don't know. But does it do anything to really help us be safe and secure? So coming up in segment two, we're gonna talk to Andrew Pollack. Really a great guy, and you'll get to hear what he's doing to try and keep your kids safe. And he'll also tell us a little bit about Meta, who was lost in the shooting, his wonderful, beautiful daughter, you know, his gift. So, I got my pages of outrages here, and I'm looking down the list, and, you know, we see the whole impeachment thing is heating up, and can you believe the fraud that this thing is? Do you watch these witnesses? They're one after another, you know, when Schiff or one of the Democrats are out there questioning them, this is the end of the world, this is what Trump did, and they make out this whole case of Trump being this, this evil conspirator. And then you get a couple of level-minded, level-headed Republicans get up there and ask a couple of clarifying questions when they're allowed to ask the questions, you know, because Schiff pulls them off all the time when they get a little too close to the truth. But even with the questions that they do get to ask, you see, witness after witness after witness ends up having no real direct knowledge other than the one ambassador who said basically, and had to be pulled out of him, by the way, is it, what did Trump say to you? And in essence, I'm going to paraphrase it, Ed says, I want no quid pro quo. I want nothing. Just go tell the president, do the right thing. The president of Ukraine, tell him to do the right thing. You know, be fair, be honest, right? That's should be the end of it, right then and there. Why is it not the end of it? Because this is all political. This is all a terrible thing that's happening to our country. And I talk about this all the time because it gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, why, with all we're seeing, is this not coming to an end? Because this is where we have to realize it doesn't matter about the truth here. The truth is gone. That's not a point that we're trying to figure out. Because if it was, we would have said after the first or second witness, well, okay, this isn't really going anywhere because nothing happened. It's like the Mueller probe. They knew as they were investigating almost right away, there was no collusion with Russia. But we have a political goal. And our goal is to hurt or get rid of this president because they don't like him. So they're making stuff up. The rule of law was spit all over. We see now that they're indicting an FBI agent because he faked up some of the stuff in the Pfizer warrant. So, of course, you know, it's coming out, you know, all this report someday is going to come out. Now they're saying December 9th, the report will come out. Well, we'll hear about the Pfizer warrants. And I think the conclusion that's been leaked out so far is that this FBI agent really changed things in that report, in that warrant application, so that it would look worse than it was, so that they could get the warrant. But I think and here's where I'm concerned. What I've said all along, I think there'll be a lot of finger pointing and a lot of people did things wrong, but none of those big players are going to get nabbed up in this. I think, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, of all the things I ever hoped I was wrong about, I hope I'm wrong about this, but this FBI agent, they're going to indict him, apparently, and, you know, is it going to go any higher than that? Because they're saying that even though he did illegal things with the Pfizer warrant by changing things, it wouldn't have changed the fact that the court would have given him the warrant anyway. There was enough other stuff in there that they would have given him the warrant to spy on the first guy in the Trump administration, Carter. I think it's Carter Page, who they were looking at. All right, so we're finding this out now. This is going to go faster and faster, and the Democrats are heating it up because they want to get their information out. They would love to have a vote for impeachment so that they could say Trump is an impeached president. Trump is an impeached president. Well, I think Nancy Pelosi, who I used to, you know, of course I don't like her politics, but I thought she was at least going to be wise enough to understand, you know, and decent enough to do the right thing. Impeachment is not the answer to someone you don't like, but she's letting this go. And they know that this is all made up. They know this stuff is made up and embellished. There is no there, as they say in parlance of these kind of investigations. So Nancy Pelosi allowing this to continue is an attack on our American democracy. It's an attack on every one of us, you and me and everybody else in this country. And I was trying to really stay neutral to all the people on the other side who are just happy that this is happening. To them, yeah, it might be breaking the rule of law. Yeah, it might be corrupt. Yeah, it might be really terrible. But you know what? We got to get rid of Trump, so it's okay. Do they realize what they're doing? And that's an honest question. And I hate to ask, are they just stupid? Are they evil? Or do they really not get it, what they're doing to the country? I don't know. I had Rock and Roll Race Car Jack here at my house recently. And Jack and I were talking about it, and he's just flabbergasted, you know. And that's one thing. That's a nice word, flabbergasted. Jack is flabbergasted at what's going on. He can't believe it. In his circles, people are starting to see what a sham this really is. And a lot of the people he's dealing with are liberal kind of guys and girls. And he says even they are starting to see this is a sham. I think if you look at the polls, they're saying that this really hasn't changed anybody's minds. If you were against Trump, then you think this is great. If you were for Trump, then you see it for what it is, a sham and a scam. And it's a perpetration on every single one of us. So I guess we're going to see as time goes by. You know, the holiday season will march on and we will see if there's an impeachment. And I think that's where they want to go. They want to impeach him and they can run around screaming, Trump is impeached. Trump is impeached. Oh, that was my point. See, sometimes I lose my point when I'm going around here. Nancy Pelosi came out and said that an impeachment should not happen unless there's a strong bipartisan need for it to do it, an agreement that it should be done. Well, when you look at the only vote they've had here, the vote to have this inquiry sham that's going on now, it was bipartisan, but it was bipartisan against. You had all the Republicans and two Democrats vote, no, we're not going to do this. All the other Democrats voted yes. So how is that a strong bipartisan presence and agreement that we should do this, that this is the right thing to do? There's not. There's not. The American people are the same way. This is not something that they want to do because people can see through it. You know, it's amazing as we watch this take place. So let's keep our eyes open. Let's keep our ears open and see what happens. Remember, call. Call your congressman, call your senator, and tell them, end this farce. This is not right. You're hurting our country for years to come. My kids, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. Your kids, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren are being injured by what's happening right in front of us today. Okay? So I'm looking through some of the other things. I had a great opportunity the other day. I'm very happy. Can I give myself a little pat on the back for something? I was at ISC East in New York City recently, and that is a huge safety and security convention for people that make all kinds of equipment and provide stuff for safety and security. It's with the Javits Center in New York City. Beautiful place. If you ever get a chance to go to a convention there, you'd really love it. Very, very nice. They do it really, very well. And while we were there, my company was up for a couple of awards, and I talk about them here all the time, not the awards, but the programs. The program that I'm really trying to push out there for you to push to your kids' school and businesses is, you know, creating a threat, a student-based threat assessment team. How to identify those dangerous kids? Well, you can do the same thing in the workplace. How do you identify those dangerous people and intervene before they hurt us? Well, our program won best platinum for the best program to identify and create a team to protect children by conducting student-based threat assessments. I thought that was great. The second award we won that we put in for, you know, we put in, hey, this is what we do for police training. This is the Lieutenant Pangaro method of training police officers. You know, we use role players. We bring people in that have all kinds of experiences that are beyond what I might have. And we bring them and put them on the ground with the men and women of law enforcement, and we interact with role players, and we have scenarios, and we get them to actually use the things that we're teaching in real scenarios so that they can go back to your community and do a better job for you. So we won Best Police Education Method also. So there's a little pat on my back for Team True Security Design. Now, while we're there at ISC East, it was really cool, we saw we had the awards dinner, and the guest speaker was none other than Bill Bratton, former commissioner of the NYPD, commissioner of the Transit Police, commissioner of the Boston Police Department, commissioner of the LAPD. The man has a tremendous history of law enforcement. He worked very closely with Rudy Giuliani back in the day when they cleaned up New York, which was in the 80s, early 80s. New York was dangerous, the 70s and 80s. When I was a kid, you didn't want to go to New York City because there was every single day, there was almost 3,000 murders a year. Do the math. There's a 10 a day across the city the size of New York, which is big, but 10 murders a day. You could go there on a vacation. You could go there to see a play and get murdered or raped and robbed right in Times Square. It was horrific in the city. And then Giuliani came in, and he along with Bill Bratton, came up with the plans that they used to clean up the city. And it was beautiful. They really did clean up the city. Michael Bloomberg continued many of those programs. And we talked about him last week. You know, the Stop and Frisk program took so many guns off the streets. It just continued to tighten the control over the criminal element in the city that the city got very nice. I mean, crimes dry. I think they have 300 murders a year now. You know, that's a huge drop. And that's still a lot. 300 murders, almost one a day. But a lot of those are domestic violence, you know, which are in interfamily, interrelationship kind of things, not street crime where you and I could get killed. But the numbers have really come down. Now, under this Mayor de Blasio, exactly what we're going to hear from Andrew Pollack later, the liberalization of laws, we're seeing that go on all across the country, aren't we? And this is what leads to violence and danger people don't always get. So right now we see San Francisco, which is a swamp. It's a mess. You got people living on the streets. And, you know, God bless those people. I'm going to say a lot of them have mental illness, and they're drawn to California because of all the benefits. But they're living on the streets. They're going to the bathroom in the streets. There's needles and drug addicts. And instead of trying to help those people and clean up those places and bring the city to a point where it's livable for everyone else, no, it's a better idea to let them live in their filth on the street with their drugs and their misery, because we're more compassionate then. Because if not, the police will go out and do bad things to them. The thinking is just so backwards that I'm almost at a loss sometimes, where I can't imagine how someone could think that way. That it's better to let somebody live in their own filth on a tent in the street doing drugs than it is to get them some help. Get them off the street. Get them into a shelter. Get them some mental health care so that you can figure out what their problem is. I mean, if we're going to spend money on people like this, this is the thing to do to help them. Not to tell them, hey, you get free needles. Let's spend our money on free needles so you can shoot your drugs in your arm and kill yourself, right? What are they thinking? Well, this is the liberalization of America. We're seeing this everywhere. And this is where I have to question. You know, I told you how many times I have family friends that are liberal and I love them dearly. And they do have some good ideas. You know, some things that would be great if they were in place. The problem is, how do you get to them ideas? Like, you know, healthcare for everybody that's affordable and excellent. Wouldn't it be great if we had that? Are we really going to have that kind of a great healthcare system that's free, where you can go in for anything you want and get it as soon as you want it? You know, I got a knee here. I hurt my knee. I really need a knee replacement. There's no doubt I do. I heard it in playing football when I was a kid. I heard it when I was a cop. And, you know, as a more senior individual now in my 50s, I've injured my knee every time I go to the gym. It swells up. I need a knee replacement. But you know what? I don't have the time, and they're very expensive. Am I going to be able to, at any point under this free healthcare, be able to walk in and go, you know what? I want to do the knee, and I want to do it this week. We're kidding ourselves if we think that's what's going to happen if we get government-run healthcare. They're not going to give everybody everything they want. Oh, the political class, they will get the best of the best, like they always do. But the rest of us, we will not. So this liberalization of our country has so many negative effects that I don't get why people don't see it. I know you see it out there in Chasing Justice Land. Most of you, because I know there's a lot of liberal people listening too. Why you don't get it, you just see any attempt at bringing order and calm and peace to our cities as being a way to oppress people. You want to force people to do things. Nobody's saying it at all. We're just saying law and order provides a orderly place for people to live so you can conduct your business without getting raped, robbed, or murdered. What's wrong with that? People that have mental disease on the street, you get them off the street, you get them help. You don't just, you applaud them. Oh, it's wonderful you're living your life the way you want. You know, you got to be kidding me. So friends, we'll be back in a minute with Andrew Pollack, and we'll hear his side of school safety and security, and he talk about the fact that he lost his daughter, and he blames it on these kind of liberalizing policies. We'll be back in a minute with round two here on Chasing Justice.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And as we talk about the things going on in our country, the important things we need to talk about, one of the topics that comes up here a lot on Chasing Justice is the topic of safety and security. So with me today, we are very, very happy to have Mr. Andrew Pollack, who is here to talk about his experience with school safety, as well as his book and what he's doing to try and help people. For those of you who maybe haven't heard the name, Andrew Pollack is the father of Meadow. Meadow, unfortunately, was killed in the Parkland school shooting. And since that time, Andrew has made it his business to make sure people start doing the right thing to protect kids. His book is out there. It's fantastic. It's called Why Meadow Died. And I'm going to encourage everyone to go get it. Tell everybody you know about it so that we can do something to try and save the rest of these kids that are out there. So, Andrew, welcome to Chasing Justice.
Well, thanks for having me on today. It's an important message we have.
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, by the background, it's got to be a very difficult thing for any parent. I know in the off time, I was just telling you about an incident I had with my son's school, and I told my audience about that before. It was a reported shooting. It was very scary. When I looked at the things that the school did, I got to admit that I'm really not happy with all the things they do. What, from your experience, would you want to tell people? If you had school administrators listening right now, what is it they should be thinking about and doing as far as what they do to keep their school safe?
Yeah, well, my message now mostly is for parents, because it's parents' responsibility where they place their children and what school they go to. So I use my book now. I tell people it's a manual, Why Meadow Died. It's on Amazon now, it's finally in stock. But, you know, what's going on in these public schools, parents aren't aware of, and it's two problems that's going on in the system across the country. One is the lack of discipline that's been implemented on the children, where there's no lack of consequences because of bureaucrats that run a lot of these school districts. Just don't believe in discipline, suspensions, expulsions. They want their numbers to look better. So they're putting kids that are disruptive into healing circles, programs, and such not, things like that. You know, kids like my daughter's murderer was pretty violent. You know, he had to be frisked every day before school. He wasn't allowed in with a backpack. He trespassed at the school. Just, you know, he threatened people's lives at the school and never held accountable. And these leftist leniency policies that are in the public schools are making for an unsafe environment for teachers and students throughout the whole country. So parents should know about this lack of discipline that's going on. And the other major issue is the with the Americans Disability Act, they label mentally ill, violent children special needs, and they mainstream them with our children in the school districts. And those are the two serious problems that are going on in the public schools. And it's laid out in my book. You know, people have to read it and keep their kids safe. And, you know, these kids are violent, and they label them special needs, and they mainstream them, and parents don't know about it, you know. Right. And it's not a secret, you know, why doesn't this happen in private schools? Because they don't have these type of kids in private schools, and they don't have, you know, they have discipline with consequences in private schools. So that's the difference, and you can't put a price on your kid's safety. I tell parents there's no cost that you wouldn't incur for your children, and you just have to look into the options of what, you know, where you're going to put your kids. I would never put my kid in the public school again if I had a child, and that's what's going on in the country. Between that and then some schools don't even have armed school resource officers. You know, parents, really, you have no excuse anymore to say you don't know what's going on in these public schools. Right. So if you have a child, you should know about these policies. Are they mainstreaming mentally ill, violent, disturbed children with your children? Are these policies of not holding kids accountable for committing crimes in school? Do your school participate in that? And third, a parent, you shouldn't send your kid to a school without an armed resource officer. Okay, parents should know better. I didn't know better, right. But now parents, you don't have that excuse anymore to say you didn't know this was going on, because every parent in the country knows now what's going on with these public schools.
And I have to say that your point about the lax attitude people have towards violence. Well, we see that in our entire country, aren't we seeing that? I mean, there's this move to excuse everybody's behavior. Somebody does something violent, and it's really not their fault. It's 27 other people's fault. Matter of fact, it's your fault and my fault because we did something, historically in our country. And this is dangerous for everybody. When you say that about the kids, this is one of the things that, you know, my concern was the school my son goes to, is that there was always talk that there was these really dangerous kids in the school. There's some areas of town that are not that good. And a lot of these kids come from criminal backgrounds, and now they're in the school with them. And I see exactly what you're saying. But the parents just seem to be, you know, we're helpless against this bureaucracy that says, no, we're wrong. There's something wrong with us for thinking like that. If we had these mindfulness circles, if we had these hand-holding kumbaya moments, maybe these bad kids wouldn't hurt the other kids, which is absolutely absurd. In all of society, when someone has declared themselves a danger, we have to remove them from the rest of us. Now, whether that means getting them some type of mental health counseling, which I think is completely absent in our society, because we can't talk about that. That's a taboo. You don't talk about that. But almost every one of these people in schools and in workplaces that do this damage, that shoot people up, they have problems, diagnosed or undiagnosed. So you're 100% right on the mark with that. It's the parents, and everyone has to stomp our feet just as loud as the other side that's saying, just leave these kids alone and everybody will be fine if we hold hands.
Yeah, let's mainstream them, because, you know, it wouldn't be politically correct not to mainstream them. But parents out there that are listening, you do have options, and there's nothing worse than not being able to pick your kid up at the end of the day. And even if your kid wasn't murdered in a school, you're still putting them in an environment that's really chaotic and not safe. So parents have options. You have private school, you have charter schools, and you have homeschool. Or you can move to a public school district that doesn't participate in these type of programs.
Right.
And that's what I suggest. Or you roll your dice. You roll the dice every day you send your kid to a school that has these type of kids in it. You know, they might not get murdered, but, you know, you're just subjecting them to that type of environment where a student could, it's okay to, acceptable to throw a desk at a teacher or to jump on a teacher and throw them down to the ground, or to punch, or to start an assault on your child, or steal their iPhone, or sell drugs in school. This is what's going on, and,
right.
And that's why one of the reasons teachers are exiting the profession faster than ever before. It's because of these policies in place at these public schools. And it's not going to get any better, you know. Right now in California, I warned California it's only going to get worse, and they had that shooting a little while ago, and I feel horrible for those parents. Mm-hmm. But, every parent in California sending your kid to a public school where it's illegal to suspend disruptive children.
Unbelievable.
Okay? And it's not just, and they had that policy in Florida, in Broward, where my daughter went. They didn't suspend or expel children. Children were allowed 4 misdemeanors per school year when my daughter was at the school.
Per school year?
Without ever getting introduced to per school year.
Unbelievable.
Misdemeanors without getting introduced to law enforcement. And then every year it would reset. And these programs, they're going on throughout the whole country. You know, so when my daughter was at the school, the murderer was allowed to assault a teacher, sell drugs, rob an iPhone from a kid, and do like 4 misdemeanors for the year in 9th grade. And then 10th grade, he comes back and starts with a clean slate. This is what's going on in the public schools. And it's only spreading. And it's really a platform right now for some of the candidates that are running on the Democratic Party. They want these policies enforced throughout the country. They want to enforce it even more than what's going on now. So parents, you need to wake up regardless of your party affiliation. If you want your kids going to a safe environment, you have to really look into it and put your kid, make the right choice where you send your child to school and who you vote for come 2020.
You're absolutely right, Andrew. Listen, when you talk about, you know, armed guards in the school, this is something that I do. I do threat assessments. I go around from school to school and I assess the buildings and the staff and all that stuff. And I hear all the time, there's an argument now, you know, some states, especially down in the southern part of our country, where they're more comfortable with guns, they're arming teachers and they have the armed guards in the schools. I see other places right. where the whole idea of a gun, even they don't want police officers coming in the buildings with guns. What do you think about armed teachers?
Well, I was influential in getting the bill passed for teachers to be armed in Florida. What people don't, a lot of people don't understand, it's a voluntary program. So the teacher that says, I don't want to carry a gun, well, we don't want those teachers. We want the one out of 30 or the one out of 50 that wants to go through the class. It's 150 hours of intense training. Okay, 50% of them flunk out. That's how intense it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and they're an asset to any school. So any parent that would be against that never watched the video of my daughter getting murdered and those other children where the killer walked through the building and reloaded 5 times and no one ever came in to save any of those kids who waited outside. You know, two teachers went in, they got murdered. They weren't armed. But 5 times the murderer reloaded. He could have had a musket or a hatchet inside the building and killed 17 kids. Because it took 40 minutes for the police even to get to the third floor by the time they went in where my daughter was. And average response time is 6 to 8 minutes for the police to get anywhere. So when seconds count, you need somebody there that's trained to protect themselves and the students.
Right.
You know, it's a shame we live in a society like this, but this is society. I can't fix society, but children should be safe when they go to school. And if a teacher wants to voluntarily go through this intense program to protect herself and her students, I'm all for it. And I'm all against there's no gun zones. The gun-free zones,
mm-hmm.
you know, and parents that speak otherwise, I tell them, okay, so you send your child to a school where all the doors are open, it's a no-gun zone, the gun-free zone, and you have no armed guards. That's what I tell them. You send your child to that school, and I would send my kid to a school where there's intense training to protect our children, armed guards, single point of entry in and out of the school
mm-hmm.
without an open campus. And that's just from, you know, a year and a half worth of research and watching film and seeing what happened and what happens in these shootings. It's only a common sense approach. Don't look at it, parents. Don't look at it as political. You know, you go on an airplane, you wouldn't go on a plane without going through a metal detector and police at the airport. Why would you send your child to a school with open doors and no one there to protect them?
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to me. And Democrats want to make it a political school safety. They want to make it political in a gun control debate. I just want kids safe and teachers safe. It shouldn't be about politics that you want your kids and teachers safe, but Democrats see it differently.
You know, it's unfortunate that we have that kind of a split in our country between what you and I obviously see very clearly as some of these answers, and then other people just don't seem to get it. I mean, when I go out and I talk to groups as a retired law enforcement officer, even when I was a school security director, I was permitted to carry my gun, and I did. Because if not, I would just be another guy running and hiding when things were happening. At least I was there with a weapon. I could respond. But when I talk to some of these places, and they say to me, well, you know, any gun is dangerous. In reality, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Other than that, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah, and they're saying we don't want it to look like a prison. Listen, you can't get into Disney World without walking through a metal detector.
Right.
You know, everyone's fine going to the airport going through metal detectors. So I don't see an issue with it, and that's why I put it on the parents. You know, parents, you're responsible where you put your children. And it's on them. I don't need to have a debate with people. I know what I would do and what I've seen. And if you care about your children, well, you put them in a safe environment. And that's an environment that doesn't deal with these type of policies. That's even more important. than having the armed security at the school.
Yeah.
Is having mainstreaming violent kids into the school. Because when you read about a lot of these shootings, they're most of them are avoidable. And these kids, well, everyone knew who these kids were before they pulled the trigger.
That's correct.
Even in the Dayton, Ohio shooting a few months ago, that kid made threats at school. He had a rape list, a kill list. Everyone knew that kid was evil, and he was never arrested, which enabled him to be able to buy a rifle. My daughter's murderer, same thing. He committed numerous crimes and never was arrested, and that's what made it able for him to buy a rifle.
Yep.
So for Democrats, you always hear background checks, universal background checks. Nancy Pelosi flew to Parkland. Eric Swalwell flies to Parkland pushing for background checks. But what they don't talk about is... Hold on a second. I got a Malinois here.
That's okay.
So what they don't say is if you don't arrest people for when they commit crimes or they threaten people's lives, they don't get a background. So it doesn't make a difference how many background checks you do if they implement these policies of not arresting people when they make threats.
Right.
Or involuntarily commit them when they are mentally ill. So it goes to the full extent of what we call a Baker Act, and that would go on their background, and they wouldn't be able to purchase a rifle.
Right.
So it's like, what comes first? They're getting a... having a background or doing a background check? Background checks only work if they arrest and if we enforce the laws that are already in place. And if that would have happened, my daughter would be alive. The people in Dayton I know would be alive. And I'm sure many others, mentally ill people, were able to purchase rifles or criminals because they didn't have backgrounds.
Absolutely. You know, we're running out of time here, Andrew. You and I could spend all day with this. Where do we find your book? I know you said it's on Amazon, but where do we find the book?
Amazon, Amazon.com and Barnes. It's in some Barnes & Noble, and I urge parents to please read this book. It's an eye-opener to what's going on in the public schools. The mainstream media didn't want you to see this, of what happened in Parkland. They wanted to blame the NRA. They wanted to blame the rifle. But it was these policies that were in place that enabled this type of environment in the Broward County School District. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, you owe it to yourself and your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews, to read this book, Why Meadow Died, and educate yourself into the public school system in the United States.
That's great. And what we'll do is we'll talk about that here a little more on Chasing Justice to make sure people remember. If people want to reach you on Twitter, is there another way to get you on Twitter?
Yeah, Andrew Pollock, FL. I see most of my DMs. If people want to DM me with any questions or what's going on in their child's school, I'd be happy to answer. Or another time, if you want me to come on, we could take some calls from some of your listeners. I know parents have a lot of questions. And we'll be able to answer them and help them the best we can.
That's great. Andrew, I appreciate that. And in the last minute that we have here, you know, we see the struggle you're on to do the right thing, to help people, and we're with you 100%. Just tell us a little bit, what was Meadow like? She seemed like a wonderful girl.
Well, Meadow was my baby. You know, she was my everything, my only daughter. I called her Princess. I spoiled her, I loved her, and she was a fighter. I'd want everyone to know that even up to the last minute when she got murdered, Meadow was shot 4 times down the hallway, and then her teacher locked her out, if you could believe it, so she couldn't get back in the classroom. And then she went and crawled over to another doorway where she covered a freshman and tried to save her, but the murderer went within 5 feet of my daughter and shot her another 5 times, and the bullets went through my daughter and killed the girl underneath her also. And she was beautiful. She was a supermodel, my daughter. And she loved life, and all this was taken from her from really incompetence and policies, and the shooting was avoidable. So please read my book, Why Meadow Died, so you don't put your child in this type of environment that I put my daughter in.
Andrew, I want to thank you for me personally and for the whole Chasing Justice audience. Everybody, listen to what he's telling you, okay? We'll try and get Andrew back on here. We'll take some calls from people in the near future. But, Andrew, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll catch everybody in the next segment of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Ding, ding, ding. It's round three here on Chasing Justice. Now, that was some words of advice there from Mr. Pollack. I think if we all take his words to heart and go to our schools, tell them to do the right thing, I guess that's kind of the theme here, safety and security. We're talking about again and again and again. And the opportunity to talk with Andrew, I'm very appreciative that he would come on here on Chasing Justice with you and me and tell us, you know, his story and his journey with such a tragic loss. I mean, his daughter Meadow sounds like such a wonderful young woman. When he's telling that story, I got to tell you, that's a tough thing to hear, you know, especially I have a 20-year-old daughter, and I can imagine hearing a story like that, that she was running for her life, she was shot, and she was trying to protect another student. You know, you just have to, you have to honor that memory. And you honor that memory by doing what you can to keep everybody else safe. You know, you don't let her death be something that is just a tragic event. It has to mean something, right? And I want to thank Andrew and Julie, and I want to thank Meadow for trying to save her classmate. Thought it was amazing, and I'm very appreciative of the guy. So we were talking before we had our interview in segment one. We were talking about a couple of things going on in the news. Now, President Trump, all these people are going after his taxes because they're all looking for something. They're not investigating a crime. Nobody says he committed a fraud on his taxes, and therefore we're going to look in the taxes, find that evidence that he committed a crime. They're saying, we just want to look. We're looking for crimes. We're looking for anything that we can throw on the table and go after this guy. Well, you know what? There's a saying in police work that says, you know, if I follow you around long enough, I'm going to see you do something that's illegal. Now, maybe not big illegal. Maybe something small illegal, but something illegal. You know, you'll drive funny, you'll cross a line, you'll jaywalk, you'll throw garbage on the floor. You'll do something you shouldn't do that I could run over and lock you up. Now, is that what we want going on in our country? Because that's what's going on here. So, Trump's taxes. Now, the Supreme Court has now put a hold on all these other courts saying, hang on a second. We need to take a look at this and see if there's really a justifiable need to look at someone's taxes, or is this just a fishing expedition? Because all these courts and these prosecutors that are anti-Trumpers are using the power of their position to go after Trump because they don't like him politically. Isn't that a corruption? Didn't we talk about this shortly ago? What a corruption is? Isn't that a corruption? So if the Southern District of New York has a prosecutor who's just going to go after Trump because they don't like him, let's look in his taxes. We'll find some. You know what? He should have paid $52 and he paid $51. We got him. If we're going to let that happen, then they can do that to you. They can do that to me. Hey, my liberal friends, they could come after you if they don't like what you're doing someday. So open your eyes. Wake up out there, please. You know? Another thing, we see President Obama has come out recently, and I thought this was funny. He gave some advice to the Democrat candidates. He says, you're going too far to the left. You're going too far to the left. I don't know if that's a good Obama impression. You know, I can do Reagan, right? There you go again. Well, you're too far to the left. And then George Herbert Walker. Well, wouldn't be prudent. I don't know. Not a good idea to go so far to the left. Not good. People don't like it. Right? I don't know if I could do Obama so well.
Well, you know, I think you're going too far to the left. You should have been great like I was. I was the best president. I was excellent president.
All right, so Obama tells them they're going too far to the left, to which, you know, the really left-wing radicals in the party responded in a not very nice way. They were very upset with Mr. Obama saying those things, which I found to be funny, that when you say you're going too far to the left and the people that are listening to you are way to the left, they have a tendency to not to like it. All right, President Trump. Now let's turn to President Trump and say, has he done anything great this week? All right. How about pardoning those three military officers that were accused of murder when they were stationed overseas, fighting the war for you and me, and they got involved in things that in the afterglow of the event, people sitting in chairs, wanting to be politically correct, wanting to be upset with the military, whatever their reasons were, they charged these three men with murder and other various hideous crimes to put them in prison. And President Trump came out and said, no, I'm commuting that. And our Navy SEAL, he returned him to his rank before his trial, where he was found guilty of a couple of these things. Well, listen, my bigger picture here that I see is if we're going to send these men and women into harm, if we're going to take our military men and women that are there to do what we ask them to do, to put their very lives on the line, many of them losing body parts, losing their very life, and to do what we need them to do. And they get over into the battle area, and things go really bad. We need to really look at that through that lens. Isn't that one of those things? Let's have a kumbaya circle instead of going after. Let's sit around and go, well, what was going on at the moment this happened? Let's put ourselves in that officer's shoes, in that military officer's shoes when something happened. You know, how about we give the benefit of the doubt to our people first, who are over in a war zone trying to survive and trying to do the right thing, and then sometimes things go bad. Now, for my liberal friends who are right now triggered, who are losing their minds, who are immediately getting to the Twitter, or they're going to start emailing me, you want them to just be able to commit murder and do whatever they want because they're army. No, that's not what I'm saying. Someone who blatantly commits a murder, even a military person who's stationed overseas, maybe they want to go on a rape spree and murder a bunch of people. No, I'm not for that. That is something that the military code of justice would handle. I'm talking about the men and women who are in combat locations where their very life is on the line every single minute, and they get involved in a conflict, or they see what they think is the enemy, and they decide in that instant to take action to protect themselves and their other military personnel. And then we want to sit back and judge that from 5,000 miles away and put these people in prison? I say no. Lieutenant Joe says absolutely not. We have to look at it through those kind of lenses, right? You ever been in a combat zone? No, you haven't? You're all shaking your head no? So how the hell do you know what it's really like? You politicians that sit back and do nothing for anybody. Have you ever been in a situation like that? No, you're shaking your head no? No, you've never been there? So then sit back a little bit with your judgment on these men and women who are out there doing this for us. We have to look at each instance, and we give the benefit of the doubt to the military personnel. Same thing goes for my brother and sister law enforcement officers. You ever put on a gun, you ever strap on a gun and ride around in a neighborhood where there's a lot of crime, get out of your car on foot and have to confront people in the middle of the night? You never done that? No, you're shaking your head no? Then you know what? Sit down and shut up. Because I've done that stuff. First of all, it's scary. Number two, it's second-by-second decisions have to be made. Number three, it doesn't always come out right when you're dealing with violent people. You know, there's a lot of people who are bad, dangerous people, and they don't want to be arrested. They don't want to be held to account. Matter of fact, they'll do anything to have that not happen. And they cause trouble. They cause danger. They'll shoot at our police officers. They'll threaten our police officers. And it is nowhere written, being a police officer, that you have to say, hey, I got to get shot first, then I can react. We got to look at all these people that put their lives on the line for the rest of us and look at things through those kind of lenses, and not the, well, we're hardy, we could figure, we wouldn't have done that. You see social media, you see these idiots on social media, when there's one of these shootings, they come out, oh, they should have shot him in the knee, they should have knocked the gun out of his hand. Yeah, you want to try that at 2 in the morning? Anybody here do that? Just raise your hand if you tried to do that. No? No, you're shaking your head no? Then sit down and shut up. Leave our military and our cops alone. Let them do their work. The professionals will look and see if they did something purposely bad and evil, they'll be held to account. Anything else, we have to look at it in that context. We have to take care of our people. We have to look out for them. We have to understand the situations we put them in. And it doesn't always go right. Don't blame the cops and the military. Blame the evil people and bad people on the other end of these incidents who caused it to happen. Okay? So there you go. There's my preaching today for that. Because I thought this was great that President Trump, pardoned these three men. And there's a lot more that he should. He should go through the list and find out others and pardon them. So I thought that was really great. I started talking about Bloomberg, and I got caught up talking about Commissioner Bratton and what a great speech he gave, and I could go into that. It was a lengthy speech that he gave, but it was very interesting. He talked about his whole career in law enforcement. But he talked about the stop and frisk and how many guns were taken off the street. And we saw former Mayor Bloomberg now running for president as a Democrat now. He ran for New York as a Republican after Rudy, and now he's a Democrat again, a liberal. And he comes out and he's apologizing for his stop and frisk policies. Now, stop and frisk, let's be clear what we're talking about here. Stop and frisk is the policy of when you see people, doesn't matter who the people are, there is no criteria that it has to be certain kinds of people. When you're assigned to an area where there's crime, a lot of shooting, a lot of violence, a lot of murder going on, doesn't matter where it is in your city, doesn't matter who the people are in that part of your city. The idea of the police is that if they go there and they know there's a lot of this crime and a lot of people are carrying weapons and they're using them weapons to kill each other, right? When you see a group of people or an individual and you have some reason to believe they may be armed, you stop them and you frisk them. And if they got a weapon on them, you arrest them. That does two things. Number one, it takes that gun off the street. Now that one gun, so just picture in your head the basic old revolver, a little revolver. Right? It's got 6 shots in it. Little wheel goes around when you shoot it. That gun in that bad guy's pocket could be used to kill a little girl accidentally sitting on her porch playing with a friend of hers. But you take that gun away from the bad guy and that little girl lives. That gun in that bad guy's pocket, when he goes to rob the local store from a hardworking man and woman who were trying to make a living selling sandwiches and soda pop, and he goes in there and he gets nervous and he pulls the trigger and shoots and kills the husband and destroys that family, well, you take that gun off that street and that man's left alive. Now, you compound that times the thousands and thousands and thousands of guns that were taken off the street. How many thousands of lives were saved? So that's what stop and frisk is. And that was the result. Crime went down, murders went down, shootings went down, people in communities were safer than they ever were. The problem we hear about it is that it's based on race, or it's based on hatred of certain people, or it's based on white supremacy, the cops are doing this. None of that is true. The cops are assigned to places where there's violence. Doesn't matter who lives in the neighborhood. Doesn't matter the race of the people. If there's violence in the neighborhood, that's where the cops are going to be assigned. And if you got a lot of shooting going on, you got to get the guns off the street. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Right? So people wanted to, though, say, wait a minute, too many people are getting arrested with these cops taking these guns off the street. It's not fair that all these people are getting arrested and are going to prison. So this is where logic stops functioning. And where we need to think about this. So first of all, I am not against taking guns off the street. I think that's a good thing, because then people will live. The little girl will live. The shop owner will live. You going to the theater will live. Lots of things like that, right? I am against racial-based profiling, because there's nothing to racial-based profiling. You can't tell who's a bad guy and a bad girl by the color of their skin or their orientation. That has nothing to do with crime. Crime is about how people behave. what they do, right? So if you got crime, you look at the actions. You don't look at the person, right? So if I see a group of people in a neighborhood where I know maybe there's a lot of criminal activity, and here's a group of people, and groups of people are causing the violence, I'm going to go talk to them to see, hey, what's going on? And if I see something looks like a weapon, I'm going to pat them down, get the guns, and we do what we do. And then people get arrested. People get arrested and go to jail with stop and frisk because they got weapons that they shouldn't have. Cops just don't go round up people in a neighborhood. Let's go lock up all these guys and put them in prison. It's not how it works. It's not how it works at all. You have to be guilty of a crime, right? You got to go to court. The cops just don't get to round people up and put them in prison. Fill the prison up with Lieutenant Joe's family because we don't like Lieutenant Joe. Let's go fill the jail with his family. That's not how it works. They don't just get to lock up everybody. You have to commit a crime. You have to commit a crime. Then you get arrested and you have a trial. If you're found guilty or you plead guilty, you go to prison. So what I found illogical about this whole apologizing for stop and frisk, and I haven't heard this anywhere else, is that Bloomberg is trying to apologize to communities he think will vote for him now that, boy, I was really wrong to do that. It was really all bad. It was really all based on hatred, and I'm sorry I did it. Isn't he also saying he's sorry that he saved all the lives of the people in those communities? How many thousands of people are with their families today? Because they didn't get shot and killed by illegal guns all the time that that was going on. Doesn't that make logical sense? I'm really sorry we did that. I'm sorry we took all those guns off the street. Boy, that was a bad thing for us to do. Now, I know he's not saying taking the guns was bad. What he's saying was the methodology of doing it was bad. Do you hear me clearly? Everyone out there who's typing furiously now to send me an email, right? I'm saying it has to be done legally and it has to be done properly, but it has to be done. How many people are murdered in Chicago every single week? And they have some of the toughest gun laws in the country. Every single week, innocent people are murdered every weekend. And why don't we do anything about it? Well, you know, it's politically incorrect and we don't want to offend anyone. Offend anyone? How much more offended could you be than having your little six-year-old daughter get shot in the head because some idiot is shooting somebody else down the street and a stray bullet hits her? How much more offended could you be? We just had a shooting at a football game here in New Jersey. Two high school football teams were playing, and some idiot in the stands had a beef with some other idiot. He pulls a gun and starts shooting. And a little 8-year-old boy got hit in the head, and he survived for a couple of days. And then he died. When is this enough? When do we stop with this political correctness nonsense that's killing us and fix our country so that everyone can be safe? Not just Lieutenant Joe and his friends, but so that everyone in every neighborhood, in every part of our country can be safe. Let's wake up and have some common sense. Let's listen to Andrew Pollack. Let's listen to all of us that are screaming from the rooftops here this political correct nonsense. This sham that's going on in Washington is all destroying the United States of America. It has to come to an end. Making it come to an end, we use our voices. We call. We stand up. This is what it means to be chasing justice in America. So my friends, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe. And we'll see you soon right back here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.